Arguably a Black Pride and Feminist showcase, with some citing tributes to Malcolm X, Tommy Smith, and John Carlos of the 1968 Olympic Games, and the Black Panthers, who also happened to be in their 50th anniversary year. The question is being raised, do entertainers have a right to use public platforms like the Super Bowl to express their social and political views? While the link to birth defects related to the Zika virus is still being studied, countries like Colombia, El Salvador, Panama, and Jamaica have asked women to avoid or delay pregnancy. However, Paula Avila Gulin of the U.S.-based Center for Reproductive Rights points out, in many rural areas, men and women do not have easy access to contraceptives, and many pregnancies, especially in teens, are the product of sexual violence and abuse. And in places where abortions are banned, Avila Gulin further comments, once they are pregnant, women have no options. As the discussion begins to rise, the pro-choice, pro-life debate is being brought to the forefront. Brazil, with the highest reported volume of the Zika virus, has made no such request of women. And a Black History highlight for today, Mara Brock Akil is an African-American writer and producer, born in L.A. and raised in Kansas City, Missouri. A graduate of Raytown South High School and Northwestern University, Akil owns her own production company, Akil Productions, with her husband. She is known for telling African-American stories with humor and honesty, and in a way that displays our common humanity. With hit TV shows like Girlfriends, The Game, Being Mary Jane, and the last film Whitney Houston appeared in, Sparkle, Mara Brock Akil is using her creativity to give voice and image to people of color.
Thank you, Amy. We have a full show today, and our guests are here from the Sunrise Project in Lawrence, Kansas, and they are women putting food on the table from field to table with their food production. But first, you know, we just finished our fund drive, and we have three more people that we didn't get to thank last week because their contributions were online or in the mail. Dr. Gwendolyn Cook contributed, Ruth Schisler, and Linda Van Bibber, who you'll hear later with the World Drum. Also, I'd like to thank again Dave Davis, Dave Kingsley, Gail James, the Prairie Village Office of Raymond James Financial Services, Janet Brown Moss Awaken, Betty Tate Brewer, Lisa Osborne, Carol Suma, Betty Jo Mooney, and of course the crew of Every Woman, Ebony, Amy, Beth, and myself. So with that, let's start with the Sunrise Project. How long ago, we have Emily Hampton, who is executive director, and Rachel Bond, a board member. Tell us about the Sunrise Project. What is it?
Sure. So Sunrise Project is a new nonprofit organization in Lawrence that we started about a year and a half ago. And it started kind of while three different things were happening. So I was helping coordinate the Healthy Sprouts Farm to Preschool program, which kind of connects the youngest kids in our community with healthy food through gardening and cooking and family engagement in child care centers. So we were working on that, me and my colleague Melissa Freiberger, and we're looking kind of for a new home. We were at a different agency at the time, and our funding was kind of running out, and we were learning a lot about farm to preschool around the country and how it was really housed usually under larger sort of local food or environmental organizations that we felt really didn't exist in Lawrence at that point. At the same time, Lawrence Fruit Tree Project had been going on since 2009, and they promote perennial food crops throughout the city, and had planted an orchard on common ground land, which is city lease land in Lawrence. And they were looking to file nonprofit status at the same time. And so we thought, why not kind of join forces and create a new organization that kind of houses, you know, food and environmental education programming. And also at the same time, what used to be the Sunrise Garden Center in Lawrence at 15th and Lennard Streets, where for almost 100 years there was a garden nursery there. It had been sitting there for sale for about a year, and so we just thought, what a perfect place to have sort of an urban ag center, a neighborhood center that could be really accessible to the schools in the area, for youth to get involved. And so all those things sort of coalesced, and we filed our nonprofit status, got it in January of 2015, and so here we are. We've kind of miraculously been forging forward since then. So.
Sounds like it takes a big crew to operate this operation. How many people are you strong?
Yeah, it's a lot of people.
I mean, we have our core board members. We've just added three new folks, so we're at 11 yeah. now. We just added three new folks two or three weeks ago, and we're excited about those additions. And then we also have an advisory board of dedicated community members who have varied interests and come together occasionally. They were meeting more early on in the process and then have been kind of waiting for us to formulate to this point, I think, so are jumping back in with helping hands. And we also have a slew of volunteer folks that have just gone through. We just did two trainings, right?
We did one and another one coming up,
Yeah, so, I mean, we have so many dedicated community members who have helped us fundraise over the last year and some. And then we also have folks joining forces, joining in terms of more formal positions of helping with volunteers and just running something this large. And the, I mean, the Garden Center is quite large. So it takes up a corner, a full corner of the city block.
It's a 3-acre site, actually. So that's another kind of area where we've had lots of helping hands even to get that site. You know, as a new startup nonprofit, we didn't exactly have the resources to purchase this 3-acre site all by ourselves. And so we really were looking to business partners to try to join together to purchase it. And we just lucked out and found the ideal people, Dave and Susan Milstein, who have done a lot of historic renovation in town. Also co-own Central Soy Food, the tofu facility in town. And they had been looking for a place to relocate their tofu facility, and they had been kind of looking at this site. And so we met up with them and just formed a relationship and have found a couple of other businesses to that are kind of, you know, mission aligned as well, local food focused businesses to be on the site with us. So it's going to be kind of a fun hive of activity once we get on the site. So.
And while we can't mention prices, I know you have an event. That's how you came to the forefront here on Every Woman, is I saw that you have an event coming up that looks like a lot of fun. If you want to tell about that, but without the price, of course, and how they can get more information.
Absolutely. So this Thursday on February 18th, starting at 6:30, we're going to have an event called Women in the Field, and it's a dinner and dancing evening at Abe and Jake's Landing in Lawrence, Kansas. And it's going to be a meal prepared by the women in our community who work in the field of culinary arts. So we have about seven women who work in restaurants or catering and work in our food system and provide really delicious food for our community. And then we'll have some dancing afterward, too. So, yeah, people can learn about it. Anyone's invited. And it's you can find more information on sunriseprojectks.org. That's our website. So you can definitely learn more about it there.
Now, this 3-acre plot, is this a garden plot? Is this a building site or a combination?
All of the above. All of the above. And I think we hope to make more with edible landscaping has been a conversation that we've been having more recently. But there are historic greenhouses there that are being updated now. And we have farmers who are aligned with our mission, who would like to make use of that grow space. That grow space within the greenhouses on site will also be used for our programming to have on site learning opportunities for the whole community. So all of the above. There, we will also have retail.
Yeah, we hope to be able to sort of generate some of our own revenue on site. So we haven't quite worked out the business plan details of that. There will be a retail aspect to it as well. So,
I had a question about the edible landscaping. I know that some cities actually have ordinances that say you can't have vegetables in your front yard. And, you know, there are some really beautiful, visually beautiful edible foods that I think make lovely landscaping, but there's actual laws in place saying that you can't grow food in your front yard. And is that something that you're trying to address?
Well, actually, we haven't spearheaded it ourselves, but our city just happens to be working on this right now on creating some urban agriculture ordinances. So they're right in the middle of that process right now. Over the last few months, the Food Policy Council there, Douglas County Food Policy Council, and many residents have been working to revise our zoning and include some more possibilities so people can do more edible landscaping and more growing their own food. And so we're getting in on that too and giving our, you know, input on that. So
yeah, and certainly our people with the Fruit Tree Project have been instrumental in previous years before all of this, you know, coming together to address questions of gleaning and planting a broader range of edible edible foods and edible landscaping. And certainly these things are these differ. I mean, municipality to municipality, you know, the context is certainly important. This kind of, I think, a fascinating history to, you know, the question of landscaping and the rise of suburbs and, you know, what was planted or what was seen as inappropriate to plant, things like that. So there's...
There was an active movement in Kansas City. I don't hear the term so much anymore, food, not lawns, recently. And I've planted okra down the border of my driveway for several years now. And I think okra is an absolutely beautiful plant.
Yes. It's delicious and beautiful.
Exactly. Yeah.
Absolutely. So, and I think we have looked to Kansas City for a lot of those ordinance as a model for ordinance. To use.
Yeah, I think it's kind of shocking to a lot of people when you get into, you know, just trying to use your property and enjoy your home and, you know, do something nice. And then all of a sudden, oh, no, you are forbidden from having carrots in your front yard.
Right.
And a lot of people are just right now seem to just be kind of going, why?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We need to be able to feed ourselves. And, you know, a lot of people want to be able to grow their own food and it's more affordable to do it that way too. So why not make it? Yeah. And actually, yeah. So what the Lawrence Fruit Tree Project did was it actually used to be illegal in Lawrence to pick fruit off of city fruit trees. And so they changed that ordinance so that you can pick fruit. Not that there's a lot of fruiting trees on city ground yet, but they're working to change that too. So
yeah. Well, yeah. So and most of that fruit would have just been wasted.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just fell to the ground and Squirrels always usually take advantage, but
I think this also speaks to our, you know, part of our mission at Sunrise Project too, is that we're interested in self-determination and in food. We're not interested in telling people what to eat or how to eat, but, you know, we want to be a place where we can provide programming that is free and low cost, and you know, that we're addressing environmental literacies from a lot of different cultural perspectives and understandings, and that we want to be a place where people can skill build and learn how to plant a specific crop or learn how to maintain certain things, but also to be a place where people could exchange ideas about the cultural meanings, the symbolisms, the varied uses of a plant.
Yeah, traditions, preparations of different foods and things. So.
Yeah.
Did many of your members grow up on a farm? I saw the picture of women on a tractor.
No,
I mean, on a farm.
I'm not sure all those women are actually comfortable on a tractor.
Oh, you don't think they can drive those tractors?
There might be a couple, but...
I saw that picture. The chefs?
Those were the chefs.
Those were the chefs.
So those are not farmers. But that was actually a local woman's farm, Barbara Clark of Maggie's Farm. She let us come out there and take that photo on her tractor out there. So.
I personally did not grow up on a farm. I did grow up in a small town in central Illinois, and I definitely grew up learning a lot about what I see now to be my grandmother's and my great-grandmother's knowledge, that the knowledges that they passed to my father, who then passed those things to me, things about, you know, edible, you know, wild foods, learning how to hunt, learning how to fish, learning about, you know, wild plants and mushrooms and, you know, sassafras, cutting sassafras with my dad. I mean, those are all great memories, and I think those are memories that are about a kind of history of knowledges that was in my family, women's knowledge that was also passed down to my father and to us. So it is about the traditions and the cultural meanings. And we want to be an organization that's multi-generational, multicultural, and we're, you know, I think our board reflects that, and I hope our programming is continuing to do that. And as we grow, we want to continue that, because there are lots of different perspectives on this. And there's a lot of, right now, I think in this particular historical moment, there's a lot of focus or emphasis on, you know, what to eat or eating certain things or eating certain amounts. And, we're interested in a broader span of conversations.
Absolutely.
I think about food politics.
Yeah, really a shared, I mean, that's what I think is unique about our programming, is that it's really a shared learning model, and so we're not there to be, you know, the experts. We're not expert driven. We're learning along with everybody else, and we know that everyone in the neighborhood who comes and participates, or anyone in the community who comes and participates, has something to teach us and to teach each other. And so really working together to learn with the community instead of kind of a top-down model. So
do you find with the youth outreach programs, I know a lot of things that kids growing up often don't know, that the stuff at the grocery store came from the earth.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they kind of know it, but they don't really have that hands-on understanding. So is that kind of part of your...
Oh, absolutely.
And do you have any stories that you can share? Because I'm sure kids say really hilarious
things. Do. It's, especially our farm to preschool program, Healthy Sprouts. It's pretty fun to cook and garden with three-year-olds because they come up with some hilarious things to say. I'm trying to think of what this little kid said the other day. We were making a Mediterranean, tzatziki sauce. And so we were, you know, scooping out the yogurt, juicing the lemon, and... what he said at the end was, "We did juice and it made something." You know, and it's like they're so proud. They can't, you know, they may not even be able to articulate it that well, but they know what's going on. Another time, actually, that I always remember is an in-home childcare provider that we were working with. We came and we planted some lettuce seeds in a pot and with the kiddos, and then we went away for a couple weeks, came back, and they hadn't gone back out to visit. And we were like, "Let's go check out. Let's go see what the seeds are doing." And we came over, and you know, they had sprouted, and one little boy that was, he must have been two, he just said, "They grow!" You know, and that's like, I mean, he couldn't even really speak yet, but it was, the excitement was just so fun to see, because, yeah, you're right. I mean, a lot of kids, they just, you know, you plop a tomato on their plate, they're going to say, "Why would I be interested in this?" But if they're part of growing it and with their friends and, you know, with their teachers, and they're learning where it comes from, and then they help prepare it too, they're, they're so much more likely to try it, especially when their friends are kind of encouraging them. And it's a really fun process.
I had Brussels sprouts growing in my backyard. I don't think I have very good soil. I don't know what it is. I might just be terrible at gardening.
No, don't say
But that. I had some Brussels sprouts once. Like, once I was able to actually have the Brussels sprout make a Brussels sprout or two. Mm-hmm. And some kids came over, and it was just, "Well, what's this ugly plant?" Right. And Brussels sprouts aren't that.
No.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, "Well, that's food." And they're like, "No, it's not." So we took the Brussels sprouts off the plant, and I showed them. And I have a son, too, and so he was trying them. And fresh Brussels sprouts right off the plant, I mean, they're so spicy, and they've got this really great flavor. I could just see their mind just being blown that this ugly plant was making this delicious food. And then they ate all my Brussels sprouts.
Yeah. Yep.
So the one time I got them to grow, this horde of children just devoured them because they found out that was food and they liked it.
Yeah, you definitely have to take away any expectations that you might have about your garden being picked at a certain time or growing in a particular row or anything. It's just, you know, it's really just a big experiment. But it's a lot of fun.
Well, that's just one of my favorite things about working with children.
Absolutely.
They're always full of surprises.
Oh, yeah. Even the older kids, too, though. You know, we're kind of expanding on one of our programs is called Summer of Service. It used to be with the United Way, and they kind of transferred it over to us, and it's youth volunteering opportunities. So we kind of match youth up with different week-long projects at different nonprofits throughout the community, and we really want to expand on that, too, and have more food and environmental programming involved in that, and really make it more of kind of a service learning as well, where they're not just, you know, kind of giving, you know, charity work and then feeling good about themselves and patting themselves on the back, but afterward kind of having this time to process and think, you know, why are people experiencing, like, if they're, you know, helping with the garden at the shelter or something, why are people homeless, and what is the root cause here, and, you know, how complicated is that, and just learning those kinds of things. Because Melissa, my co-founder, we both have 15-year-old children, daughters, and, you know, we found that it's just, there's a lot of things out there for kids to learn about themselves, to kind of develop themselves, their music lessons, sports, those kinds of things. But there's very few opportunities for youth to actually plug into the community and see where they can make a difference. And so that's something we really want to expand on, too. And we see a lot of excitement from youth when you give them the responsibility to actually, you know, feel empowered to make a difference in their community. It's pretty fun to see the older kids make those changes, too. So,
in the summer, I mean, the list of programming and the organizations that you all have managed to maintain ties to or extend ties with has just expanded. I mean, exponentially. I mean, and I think that's part of what we're about too, is expanding the definition of what what environmentalisms are, you know, so that, for instance, you know, working with a domestic violence shelter or, you know, trying to, you know, get a sense of people feeling safe in their communities as part of environmentalism, as, you know, people, youth being able to tap into these ideas, these critical conversations sooner with the summer of service and hopefully through our programming.
Yep. And they're ready. I mean, they're ready to have those discussions too. They're so excited to be able to have that dialogue. So
yeah. What tell them about the Martin Luther King Day event that you did.
Yeah.
It wasn't this year. It was last year.
Yeah.
Session with you.
Yeah, we did. It was really interesting to see what kind of topics they were most interested in. A lot of them were. A lot of kids seem to be really into the LGBTQ issues and, you know, just equal rights for everybody. And some of them did want to work specifically with the environment. Some are more interested in, you know, animal rights issues and things like that. But we kind of did a workshop last year to see what kinds of topics do you want to delve into in the coming years with Sunrise Project. And yeah, it's just fun to see them get so excited. You know, I have a 15-year-old, so I know she just comes home and just pouring out with all these ideas. And
they have really good ideas.
They do.
Like little simple things that you don't think about.
Well,
when
there's,
you're
on our cell sheet, we always, our little info sheet, we have this statistic that says, you know, that we found through Kansas Communities That Care. It's a statistic from them, and it says that only 10% of youth in Douglas County feel safe in their neighborhoods, you know, and I think people just have this misconception that Lawrence is just, why would you ever feel unsafe? And the interesting thing is that often when we hand that out to people, they say, oh, well, they're probably just exaggerating. Those kids were just, you know, I mean, it's like people don't necessarily take youth's ideas and feelings seriously, but, you know, there's a reason why they don't feel safe, and we need to, you know, we need to talk with them about that and take them seriously.
Mm-hmm. Could you give us your website information again?
Absolutely. It's Sunrise Project. KS.org.
Well, and your event on Thursday,
February 18th, 6:30 to 10 at Abe and Jake's Landing, and you can find the link on that website to learn more about that. So,
and our guests today have been Emily Hampton, Executive Director of the Sunrise Project, and Board Member Rachel Bond.
Yep. Bond.
Mm-hmm. And Vaughn? Mm-hmm. I've had that backwards the whole time. Rachel Vaughn. Rachel Vaughn.
Sounds similar.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming in and telling us about this. And it sounds like you guys are working hard and have a lot of good help behind you.
A lot of fun.
We do. It is a lot of fun.
Thank you. Pleasure talking to you. Yeah.
Thank you. And we need to take a quick station break, and we will be back with the World Drum interview.
KKFI is proud to sponsor Kansas City's Winter Music Camp, February 18th through the 20th, presented by Folk Alliance International at the Sheraton Crown Center. This 3-day music camp is open to all and features local, national, and international instructors such as Albert Lee and Allison Brown. Guitar, fiddle, mandolin, banjo, and many other acoustic instruments with class topics like songwriting, production, gospel choir singing, Celtic, and other folk styles. Registration and full schedule for the Winter Music Camp are at folk.org/camp.
This week, he's Jewish and she's Muslim.
All of us practice Jewish holidays and traditions, and we also, as a family, observe Muslim holidays and traditions.
We mark Valentine's Day with a love story that brings two religions under the same roof. I'm Maureen Fiedler. That's next time on Interfaith Voices.
Tuesday at noon, right after your Fusion Funkmeister.
Hello, this is MC Richardson, Vice President, News and Public Affairs Chairs, Forum Coordinator. First acknowledging Black History Month, this Tuesday, February the 16th, a special event, People of Color Community Forum, with the Ad Hoc People of Color Committee presents, and Mid-Coast Radio Project, Inc., KKFI, is the host. Doors open 5:30 p.m. in the annex room. 6 to 8 p.m. is the program. This will be a state-of-the-art, cutting-edge event, which you don't want to miss. Interaction and dialogue between the board, the staff, standing committee, and the people of color. Refreshments and parking, no charge. This is a KKFI 90.1 FM public service announcement.
This is Sharon Lockhart with Ebony Johnson, and we're in the recording studio with Linda Van Bibber, who has the world drum with her. And I want to turn it over to Linda right now to tell us about this world drum. First, let me say I met Linda probably in 2000 when I joined a group called Women of the Drum and met a lot of women there. And Linda has been pretty active in drumming. I believe she is perhaps part Cherokee. Am I correct?
Yes.
And tell your story, Linda.
Well, I originally heard about the world drum on the Bonataka American Indian website when it first came out in 2006. It was still even an idea at that time. I asked Regina, who has the Women of the Drum, I said, well, are we interested in getting this drum? And she said, sure, but you have to get it yourself. So so I did. I contacted Morten Storeide in Norway and said that we would like to have the drum. Since that time, we've been privileged to have the drum here in Kansas City 5 times. And this is the 5th time it's been here in Kansas City, 3rd time on KKFI. I want to put a big shout-out, thank you for KKFI for letting people know about the drum and the project, because that is the criteria for having the drum, is you are responsible to get the word out about the project and to pass it on to the next person.
And the culmination of getting this drum here in Kansas City is coming up this Sunday. Tell us about the event. Yes. And we will hear the drum speak shortly.
Yes. Every year on February 14th, there's an event called World Sound Healing Day. It was started 14 years ago by Jonathan Goldman and his wife Andy. Being kind of bored with the whole Valentine's Day thing, they got the idea to send a sonic Valentine to Mother Earth for healing. And that's a project that's very near and dear to my heart. And we started having an event here in Kansas City to honor World Sound Healing Day at Aquarius Books up in their upstairs room, which we'll be there again this year, too, because Barbara is incredibly generous and lets us have the place. This is a free event, so it's nice to not have to pay rent for a place to have it.
And the Aquarius Bookstore is on Broadway, just about 39th Street.
Right. It's in between 39th and Westport Road.
Right.
Yeah.
So, on the west side of the street.
Right. And World Sound Healing Day was conceived to help heal the planet. They have done measurements of meditations. The Global Consciousness Project uses a series of random number generators spread throughout the world to collect their data. And they have measured a World Sound Healing Day event and found that during this day, on this event, violence went down globally. That's also happened when there have been other major meditation events around the world, that the violence would go down. So we make a difference. Our voice counts. And the World Drum Project was started for very similar reasons. Quite Cougar in Norway had a vision that there would be a drum that would be passed hand to hand all around the planet to awaken people's awareness of the need for healing on the planet. So they started this project in 2006. Morten Storeide heard about the vision and their friends, and he said, I'm going to make that happen. That needs to happen. So he went to a Sami shaman named Birger Mikkelsen and had him make a drum. And now the drum is on its 10th journey around the globe. It's been in 650 different locations. It's participated in more hundreds of ceremonies even besides that. I mean, while it's here, it will participate in about 10 different ceremonies while it's in the Kansas City area this month. So, and World Sound Healing Day is, of course, the biggest one. And I am so excited to be able to bring these two incredible projects together in the same spot in the heart of America. And we just really need to project our love out. And I know we have so many loving, wonderful people in this area that will come and join us to spread that intention of love for the planet.
And I'm anxious to hear from the drum, but first I want you to tell, and we'll mention several times, at noon on Sunday at Aquarius between 39th and Westport Road, there will be a ceremony.
The ceremony will be at 7:30 that evening.
Okay.
Now, the awe toning for World Sound Healing Day does occur at noon for 5 minutes to create a wave of sound that's continuous all around the planet that day. Every hour, somebody on the planet is going, somewhere else is going to be toning that awe tone. The awe tone opens up the heart chakra. It produces oxytocin in the body. It's very powerful. And when you have a group of people doing this, I mean, last year we had 40 people at Aquarius, and the energy and the love in that room was just so incredible.
So you should show up probably around 11:30 to find a parking spot.
Well, you can do that at home.
Oh, you can do the autone at home.
You can do the autone.
Well, demonstrate the autone. Oh,
thank you.
Okay. You can do it with me?
Okay.
Sure.
Okay.
We'll follow your lead.
Yeah. Just take a deep breath and let it out with the sound ah.
We would take another deep breath and do that, and that would continue for 5 minutes.
For 5 minutes.
Okay.
And you can tell just right now it's already changed the state of consciousness in the room.
Yeah.
Just from that little tiny bit.
Definitely. I definitely felt more of a release in a space of clarity.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing what some of the simple things can do. And we have with us 24 hours a day the most powerful sound healing tool available to us, and that's our voice.
Mm-hmm. We could do that anytime when we get frustrated, stressed out. Just do the autone.
Yes.
It is. It's just so, as life has it, it's so timely to have just the power and sound of a drum, and even you saying with your own voice, because right now there's a lot of noise going on, and it can be very distracting and very tempting to just pay attention to the noise instead of, like you said, just get in tune with your own voice and, you know, really hear the sound of love resonating more deeply.
Let's hear from the drum now.
Okay.
There's the heartbeat. When people drum together, there's something that happens, and maybe you can explain that, Linda. You sort of get connected somehow.
You do. I learned from an African woman named Sabamfu Somme, which is why I sought out Women of the Drum in the first place, that there is no faster way outside of food to create community than drumming. Hmm. When you sit down and drum together, or even if you're just with a drum and sitting together, it creates community. It's just absolutely amazing. It puts people on the same page, so to speak. And there have been tons of studies done to show that drumming creates relaxation. It puts you in. You can get into kind of a meditational trance mode doing the drumming. It's absolutely amazing. And Sunday night, this event is at 7:30 at Aquarius. And yes, you might want to come early because the parking lot is really, really tiny. But at 7:30, we'll start the event. Women of the Drum is going to open, doing a little bit of drumming for us. We're going to have then a sound healing concert by Music of the Spheres, of which I'm a part, with George Moon and Rami Haas. And then after that, we're going to get some audience participation. Everybody's going to get together. We'll form a circle as best we can. We're going to do the autone, and the world drum will be keeping a heartbeat while we're doing the autone. I am just so excited about the incredible energy that I know that this is going to create.
I might add that we are going to have a picture of the drum up on the KKFI website. We've taken pictures already today. And Ebony, Mike, I don't know what picture we'll pick up. Linda Van Bibber and myself will surely be pictured with the world drum. It's a beautiful drum. It's reindeer hide. It comes packed in an amazing case that they built for this drum. And with two... what do you call the...
Mallets.
Mallets. With two mallets. The smaller mallet, I know, produces a different tone than the larger mallet. Which one did you use earlier?
I used the smaller one. Actually, and that's just an interesting story, too, because the mallets break a lot while it's traveling, and people put in new mallets. And the smaller mallet, actually, I put in when it got here because it's a little bit harder than the other one. And the other one has a lot of fringe on it that interferes with the tone of the drum.
Ah.
So I said, well, I'm going to donate one of my mallets, besides several, to send on with the world drum. The mallet that came with it the first year, which was a traditional Sami mallet, was made out of an reindeer antler.
I remember that.
And they're really hard, so they get a nice, sharp, crisp tone mm-hmm. that you don't get with a really soft, like Native American frame drum mallet.
Yeah. We had the drum. I've got a picture of me outside the White Light Bookstore with the drum. And gosh, I don't know how many years that goes back.
It was 2007.
Wow.
Yeah. The best pictures that we got of the World Drummer, the ones that Sharon took that year. It's really awesome.
Oh,
yes.
Good. Yes, and we were up on a hillside, and we had a big ceremony. Yeah, I think we even have a video of that.
Yes, Vicki Schwabe did a nice video. We did a 24-hour heartbeat ceremony with the drum, and Vicki created a video that's out there on YouTube. If anybody wants to look for it.
Oh, what would you search for on YouTube? Just World Drum, do you think?
Yeah, a lot of things will come up on YouTube with World Drum. There's some really cool things on YouTube of the drum in tuba with the tubing throat singers.
Throat singing. Yeah. I love that throat singing.
Oh, yeah.
Have you heard of that, Ebony?
No, I have not heard of that before.
It's called Tuva, T-U-V-A.
Right.
And these people somehow sing. It comes out of their throats. It's like toning, but it's way down inside. It's very interesting. And I know that Linda has something that Morton wrote about the World Drum that she would like to read for us.
Yeah, Morton sent me kind of a long piece that was his reflection on the past few years with the World Drum and how it was making him feel, including humility and joy. And the piece that I'm going to read here is what he said about the love. He said, "When I think of the World Drum Project, I experience an enormous love. Every time I'm physically able to meet with the World Drum again, it is this feeling of growing love that fills me, love that pours out from her, love given from people all over the globe, from their heart to her heart. This heart is common for all of us, and its rhythm is the heartbeat of life itself. Even though our world today is filled with huge differences in culture, religion, politics, status, and with human-made limitations, love is without borders. It is unconditional and rises above all constructed frames. It is the love for life and nature that binds us together, no matter who we are, what we are, or where we come from. All the feedback about the project throughout the years can be summarized as reflecting something fundamental that stirs inside us, no matter where we are to be found on the globe. With the World Drum, we have woven a web of love and created a network of unity across all borders. This love is the very essence of life, the seed of all life, for interacting and co-creating, a universal force that stirs deep within each and every one of us, feeding the hope that we will change our ways of living and move towards cooperation and co-creation to the benefit of the community and for a sustainable Earth."
That's lovely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I was reading that earlier, I was thinking about the tragedy that recently happened in Paris, the terrorist act, about the compassion and calling people together. And I'm suspecting that there would be a peak at that point, too. Although I don't know because they didn't mention that. Do you think that would be the case when people are compassionate and
yes.
and they gather universally around a terrible tragedy like that?
Yes, the emotion of compassion creates a coherence between the brain and the heart. And there's an organization called the Global Coherence Initiative that measures coherence in the electromagnetic fields of the planet. And compassion also creates coherence on our planet in the electromagnetic fields.
So every exercise we can do to remind ourselves to tone, the ah tone, leads toward better understanding and compassion and health and healing and heart connection.
Yes, it does. And if you don't feel comfortable toning an ah tone, just feel the love.
Mm-hmm.
Just feel the compassion. It makes a difference in our world.
You know, I'd like for you to tell one more time how people can participate in this, and then we will go out with you drumming and us doing the ah tone.
Okay. If you would like to participate in the World Drum Project, have it for an event of your own, you can either contact me while it's here, or, and I'm Linda Van Bibber, I'm on Facebook is probably one good way, or you can contact me at laylahv@swbell.net, or you can contact Morton if you would like to get the drum at a later date for an event. The best way to contact Morton is, again, on Facebook. He has a Morton Storide and the World Drum Project. If you put in those two things, his Facebook page will come up, and that is the easiest way to get a hold of Morton.
And Storide is
S-T-O-R-E-I-D-E.
E-I-D-E. And I bet just Googling the World Drum will get you lots of YouTube.
Oh, yes, it will. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. So are we ready to tone and
sure.
to do the drum beat? The heartbeat, I guess we should call
yeah.
it. Thank you, Linda Van Bibber, for being our guest today. And Linda, you can find Linda Van Bibber, B-I-B-B-E-R, on Facebook. And Linda, you have your own healing practice, healing sound practice.
I do. I do sound healing now in Topeka, Kansas, and I do several events with sound out of the Learning for Life Center in Topeka.
Great. Thank you, Linda, for bringing the World Drum in today. It's beautiful.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks for helping us get the word out.
And next we have a spot that Beth spent a lot of time and effort editing. We have a connection with Rita Weirden here from Wings International News Gathering Service or Women's International News Gathering Services, and a particular connection because of Beth. And Beth brings us this next recording.
So today we are discussing about the importance of World Radio Day, which will be celebrated on February 13th. It is believed that radio saves life. For most people in the rural area, their medium of information is radio. Mm-hmm. That's where they would have program, for example, to know how they can protect themselves from malaria, yeah, mm-hmm. that they need to use bed nets. Do you think that community radio are empowered enough to save people's life?
Yes, for sure, because information is always something powerful. And getting information through the right channels, something really essential. And we have a lot of media with built-in barriers. Like you need to have electricity. You need to be able to read, and you need to be able to read difficult texts. You need to be able to transport print products on far-off regions. And so on and so on. So I think there are few media that are so barrier-free than radio.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is a strength. Radio is going to keep having.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there are some radios that you just need to use the battery.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. Yeah. So you are independent from electricity. Mm-hmm. You are independent of being able to read complex texts. Yes. So it's available for children.
Yeah. It caters the whole group in the society. Radio is for everyone. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And the great thing in community radio is putting normal people in the role of broadcasters, and the probability that they are much better able to speak a language people really understand, mm-hmm. and much better able to address issues that are relevant in a way that is that gets through.
Yeah,
this probability is huge.
Please tell us what was your experience or is your experience working at the radio. Was it challenging? what was good and challenging about working at the radio?
Well, the period of time when I was active was when we were trying to establish the radio. So paradoxically, I have been little involved in programming, but was working mostly like backstage.
Yeah, which is also difficult.
Yes, it was slot. We were a big team and we were working together. Mm-hmm. It was also in Austria. It was about establishing this kind of radio, mm-hmm. which in the Austria was one of the last European countries mm-hmm. to allow private broadcasting, oh. and in the. Yes, it's paradox, really. And in the first drafts for private radio law, nothing like non-commercial or community radio was foreseen. So that was something
we
needed to fight into this law, because the first drafts they wanted to establish, there was public broadcasting, of course, there's a long tradition in Austria, and what people were wanting to establish was private commercial broadcasting. And it was in this period when the activists for community radio became loud in all parts of Austria, and they were saying, we were saying, there's a third type of radio also, and it is essential for the development of the society, and let's consider this type of radio too, and let's make it possible, because in these first drafts, the financial regulation, like the financial background that was expected from a project starting radio, there were definitions that were impossible for a non-commercial project, and it was possible to change that.
Amazing.
For example. And then for me, the work was a lot about networking. Mm-hmm. So we were... In the years before we started to broadcast, we were getting into contact with different kinds of communities, different kinds of interests, groups in Vienna, talking to them and asking if they were interested in getting involved in programming. I just had came to the city a couple of years ago, so in this networking phase, I really knew to know the city, and it was exciting to get acquainted with all these peoples, with their issues, with their themes. For me, the picture of Vienna changed completely into this colorful and vivid and active city with interesting initiatives. In every corner. Mm-hmm. I wasn't aware of this type of civic society in Vienna before. Mm-hmm. And community radio, for me, working for a community radio, active networking, was a possibility to
experience.
Yes. So it was huge. And our second field I enjoyed was in really early stage, and that, of course, is media education. That's my main field of activity. We started thinking about training, and we recognized training and workshop as a most important channel how to get people become active, because it's about trying it out yourself. And we were discussing a lot how these forms of how you express yourselves in radio and what types of programming there are. They are so much, they orientate on public broadcasting. And we were talking about how a community radio should develop its own forms of expression, yes, its own methods of producing radio. And we were quite radical in this, and it was a beautiful phase of trying out many different things. And we were saying, like, community radio is radio. You like to switch off. And what we meant by that is that programs in community radio, you don't need to please everybody.
You can be yourself.
Yes, and you have, you can experiment with different types of expression. Mm-hmm. And when I was working with young people, we all often recognized how difficult it is to leave the conventional ideas of how a radio program should look like. And they had this interesting theme, and the first they would like to do is to run to an adult expert and do an interview. And we were often saying, hey, these experts, they talk in media every day. What we don't hear is you. So let's start
from
to talk about your everyday experience with this subject, because your voice is the voice that's not been heard. And often these programs were the most interesting one. Later on, we also might talk to an expert and so on, but we often started with the kids themselves, and it was good.
Yeah. I mean, working for the Radio Orange myself, I am very grateful because I can see that the radio is very inclusive. There are different programs from young children, teens, adults, and everybody. And I agree that I don't think this would be possible in the mainstream or commercial radio. Let's talk about the freedom of expression.
It's so sad that so little can be done. Cry loud when something happens.
Freedom of expression, which we all need.
Yes.
It was really wonderful to have you in the studio and discuss this very important topic of the relevance.